Hello, I'm Paco Alvarez, and this is the backstory from Type Investigations, where we sit down with our reporters and ask them to take us behind the scenes of their work. Donald Trump recently clinched the Republican nomination for the 2024 presidential election. Meanwhile, he's faced a slew of legal challenges that have threatened his business empire. We thought it was a good time to revisit our discussion from 2018 between former assistant editor Elena Mejia Lutz and journalist Anjali Kamat about her investigation, Political Corruption and the Art of the Deal, which probed some of the Trump Organization's lucrative real estate deals.
Welcome to The Backstory. My name is Elena Mejia, and today we are here with Anjali Kamat, an investigative fund reporter who spent months in India investigating the Trump Organization's lucrative real estate deals in the country, valued at an estimated $1.5 billion. In Political Corruption and the Art of the Deal, published in partnership with The New Republic, Kamat reveals how the Trump family's real estate partners in India are connected to an extensive history of lawsuits, police inquiries, and government investigations. Evidence of potential bribery, fraud, intimidation, illegal land acquisition, tax evasion, and money laundering are also prevalent. The investigation exposed the many corruption red flags surrounding the Trump's projects in India and President Trump's conflicts of interest that will persist throughout the course of his presidency. This project also formed the basis of two episodes of Trump Inc., a podcast series from WNYC and ProPublica. How did you start cultivating this project? Why were you expecting to find such a large history of lawsuits or government investigations behind the Trump's India partners?
I guess right after Trump got elected, there were a couple of news reports that I was seeing in India about how the Trump Organization's largest overseas portfolio of licensing deals was in India. And about, you know, 9 or 10 days after the election, he received an international, he had a group of visitors from India. And this was his second set of international visitors. The first included the Japanese prime minister. And the second set of international visitors were three of his Indian real estate partners. So they're real estate developers from India who are his business partners on some of his deals in India. So that got a little bit of attention here. And I got really curious about looking into who these guys were. And some of the preliminary reporting that I saw in the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Indian media talked about how at least a couple of the Trump Organization's partners had close ties to elected officials who were in the ruling party that's currently governing India right now. And one of those partners is actually a sitting elected official. He's a five-term state lawmaker. And I was just, you know, that just turned up my antennae, and I was like, oh, what is going on here? Because one of the things that, you know, I was aware of is just that real estate in India is a very, very, very corrupt sector. It's, you know, something that's very well known. The World Bank Group ranks India 181 out of 190 in terms of getting a construction permit. You know, people in India frequently talk about a builder-politician nexus. There's, you know, been dozens of media investigations in India about the ties between developers and powerful political officials, and also about, you know, various investigations into developers in general allegations of money laundering and tax evasion. And luxury real estate in particular in India, as in around the world, is notorious for being a place for people to sink their unaccounted wealth. So I was just curious. I was like, well, what is going on here? And I was talking to Esther about it at the Investigative Fund. And we had a meeting at the Investigative Fund soon after the election to talk about, you know, how we wanted to cover the Trump presidency. And, you know, one of the focus points was like looking at Trump Organization businesses around the world. And Esther and I talked about, you know, how it would be good to look into the India deals in particular. So I started looking into it while I was in New York, and then spoke to several Indian journalists who cover real estate, spoke to different people in India, and then decided to spend as much time as possible in India on the ground digging into this.
How did you manage to develop a project using both print and audio? How do you make sure you're getting what you need and getting enough information for both platforms?
That's a good question. I mean, I didn't really know when I started off on the project, you know, didn't really have a sense of what the outlet would be and what the medium would be, whether it would necessarily be print or audio. I mean, I come from a documentary TV background. So I did think about whether this is a story that would work for television. And I felt pretty quickly that it wouldn't, because one of the things that became very clear, even just in like the initial calls I was making from New York to different people who are real estate experts or who've covered this beat for years, is how careful people are about what they want to say in public. And I realized that, you know, getting anyone to speak to me was going to be a challenge, and getting anyone to speak to me on camera was going to be nearly impossible. So I thought about it primarily as, you know, something for print or audio. And, you know, in general, when I'm reporting, I like to record my interviews. So I have an audio backup of it, both just as safety and also for accuracy, but also just for always leaving open the possibility of working in a different medium. And it's something, you know, I told different people as I was interviewing them, where, like, you know, I was like, I'm recording this. I had a mic. I also recorded some interviews on my phone. But, you know, I think coming from a TV background and also having worked in radio in the past, Democracy Now!, which was both radio and TV, I just always like to have options. So it wasn't that hard in some ways in terms of during the reporting phase. One thing I didn't do much of, because I wasn't quite didn't have an outlet in mind, is I didn't do a lot of stand-ups or get a lot of, you know, ambient sound along the way on my during my first round of my visits to India. But then when I went back in January, I did get a little bit more of that, because I knew it was going to be coming out in audio as well.
What was the reporting strategy behind navigating the real estate industry in India to get documents, police reports, and knowing the legalities behind questionable permits?
I worked with a few Indian journalists who were absolutely crucial to this reporting, people who have been covering real estate for a long time, who are investigative journalists, and who were very, very helpful in giving me tips on how to navigate this world, and also on helping me get access to the right people, get access to the right documents, and also, you know, just getting people to trust me enough to talk to me, since, you know, these are people that they've been working with for a long time.
What was the investigative fund's role with this story? How was this project pushed forward by this organization from the very beginning?
I mean, this project would not have happened without the investigative fund from start to finish. Esther Kaplan, in particular, was the person who was excited about this story from the very beginning, and thought that this was a story and was something that we should pursue, and was willing to put the time and the resources into this reporting project, into collaborating with different Indian journalists, into making sure that I had the time and the resources to do the kind of detailed reporting that allowed the project to be completed. And this was, you know, I've been working on this since we started talking about this in November, December of 2016, and it's now March 2018. So it's, you know, been over a year of, you know, constant support and feedback, both in terms of the editorial direction and the types of questions to ask, the kinds of legal questions to be asked, the kind of legal checking that needs to be done, but also just, you know, pushing the story forward at every point, trying to find outlets that are interested in it. And, you know, I think for a while, the story, you know, for a while initially, I think the sense was, well, you know, if Trump has corrupt Indian partners, who cares? That was the reaction I was getting from a lot of people in India, certainly, because they were like, this is such a corrupt environment, you know, but really still persisting with the story, despite all the doubts and the sense that, oh, you know, we need something that's, you know, a real smoking gun. And having the confidence that this is an important story to tell, like digging deep and sort of laying out the kind of the complicated threads that make up the story to present a picture that in the end is quite damning. You know, all of that came from the Investigative Fund. You know, the Investigative Fund was absolutely central both in framing the story right from the start and like believing in the project all along the way, supporting the reporting, providing the time and the resources in making sure that I was able to, you know, have the time I needed to do this kind of gargantuan reporting project, and then being, you know, incredibly supportive and guiding the process of finding outlets to partner with that would ultimately publish the story both in print and audio.
Was there a specific strategy you used to put every piece of the puzzle together, you know, year by year, trip after trip to India? How did you keep a timeline to successfully connect India business developments to Trump's campaign and presidency?
That was definitely a hard part of the project, but I spent, you know, I have so many different timelines I drew up, timelines for every project, timelines for every partner with their entanglements with the law, timelines of what the Trump organization was doing, and timelines for Trump's entrance into politics, Trump's entry into politics. So, and then kind of, and a timeline of the Trump family visits to India and trying to, you know, make sense of all of this information along with my visits to different projects and what people on the ground were telling me and where it matched up and where it didn't match up. And then like going back and checking again and, you know, trying to find documentary evidence as far as possible in terms of trying to see where it matched up with planning, with the plans that were submitted and the dates on those. And you know, it was definitely a long and complicated process.
And when you were doing your research, did you assemble as many news stories as you could and then looked at official government documents to trace everything that happened? Or how did you manage to keep track of every piece of information?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is the Trump Organization declined to speak with us despite repeated requests. And for the most part, the developers didn't speak with me either. So this story had to be pieced together without, you know, hearing it directly from them. And the Trump Organization is not exactly a transparent organization. We know very little about how it does business anywhere in the world. So it was about piecing together the timelines and understanding what happened based on the very limited disclosures that Trump has made in his ethics filings, and using the timeline from that and matching it up against news reports over the past 10 years and what interviews the Trump family or members of the Trump organization or the Trump organization's business partners have given to media organizations at different points in time, different press releases, and also speaking to journalists who had met or interviewed anyone from the Trump organization or their partners, speaking to journalists who have covered the real estate beat for a long time and understand the reputations of these partners and were able to give me a, you know, a very well-informed assessment of that. And also matching it up with whatever documents I was able to get for in terms of the actual plans and permits for the project and matching it up with the dates of that.
Okay, Anjali, those were all of my questions. Thank you so much for doing this interview with me.
You can read Political Corruption and the Art of the Deal on our website or at the New Republic. Check out our show notes for links to more of Anjali's work. A transcript of this backstory is available at typeinvestigations.org/backstory.